Good morning, everyone. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of May 9th before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Are any questions, additions, changes to the minutes? See none. All in favor of approving the minutes of May 9th, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. All right, members, we have three important bills today, and we do need to be done for session by 10 o'clock. The first one is House File 1180, and I'll move that House File 1180 be referred to the General Register. And before I go further and take testimony, I do want to say that I know there are a number of people who have asked to testify today, and this being the Ways and Means Committee, typically our testimony is about the financial aspects of the bill and the fiscal note and how it affects state finances as opposed to other policy language in the bill. But we also do have a rule that we certainly need to take testimony if asked, but we have limits on how many testifiers we really can take. And so our testifiers today are, I have Colonel Matt Langer with the Minnesota State Patrol, and I have Greg and Sylvie Tikalski, who are a family who has, or represent a family who has had a victim that was killed by distracted driving. And so I guess those are the testifiers that we're going to have in favor of the bill. And so, and I guess there's, I've been told there's another insurance-related entity that had called in advance to testify. But we just simply can't, we don't have the time to take testimony from every single family that has had a victim due to distracted driving. And I do believe that there has been testimony on that in previous committees. I know that many of you would like to tell your stories and have in some cases, but just in terms of time delay, I'm going to have to restrict it to just having the Tikalskis, I hope, speak on behalf of everyone. So with that, Representative Uglum, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means, and I we have Representative Hornstein up there as well, who I guess has co-presented with you, and I also see Representative Neuberger, who as a paramedic in his other life has an interest in this bill. Representative Uglum, we do have the A18-0753 amendment. Do you want to take that now?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to take that now and put the bill in the form that would be correct.
All right. I'll move the A18-0753 amendment. And is there any discussion to the amendment?
Maybe we could just find out whether it's controversial, non-controversial, if there's any major
sure.
policy. Or
Can you present the amendment and tell us what is in it, Representative Uglum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, this amendment simply aligns House File 1180 with the other bodies. Bill, a few minor changes in terms of text, but that's about it.
Thank you.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
I'm sorry.
Tax committee.
Oh, yeah, let me mention, I guess that the Tax Conference Committee is starting to meet, and so if you see people leaving and coming in the audience, please understand it's not because they're not interested in this particular bill. There are other conference committees and such going on at this time, and I believe the Tax Conference Committee is starting right now. So I know that Representative Marquardt, Representative Davids, maybe Representative Hertaus, and others need to go as well. So Representative Uglum.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Like I was saying, the A18 simply aligns the bill with the Senate version, a few minor text changes, and that's about it.
Okay, and in aligning it with the Senate version, what are some of the differences that are in this compared to what's in the bill right now?
Mr. Chair, it just as a couple of examples, it makes it clearer that the use of a global positioning device is approved and okay under this bill, and it allows anyone who happens to be pulled over at the side of the road or actually Senator Limmer had a question about for instance, construction workers getting out in their car and ordering materials or whatever, and that, of course, would be okay under the text that's in here.
All right. Any questions to the amendment? All in favor of the A18-0753 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Uglem, why don't you and any of your co-authors up there that you want to have involved present the bill, and then we'll take the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. First of all, I need to from the bottom of my heart, thank everyone in leadership and the various committee chairs that this bill has gone through. I want you to know that I really appreciate this. I think, you know, this bill addresses the biggest single public safety issue that's facing us on our roads today. And I felt that I had to bring forward this bill for the safety of our families and friends, relatives, our own children. Many of us have grandchildren and they will be growing up and driving. This is a huge issue in the state of Minnesota and around the country. In fact, one in four accidents in the state of Minnesota is distracted driving. And the Insurance Federation will probably testify that each and every one of us is paying more insurance because of distracted driving and cell phone use. One in five fatalities. One in five. This is epidemic out there. It's important for everybody to understand that right now we're not breaking new ground with this proposed law. There's over 110 million people in the United States that are driving under hands-free legislation right now. There's 16 states. Georgia just passed it a week or two ago, one of the most conservative states in the country, but they have the same problem that we do. So this is a bill whose time has come. This is a bill that, yes, maybe you're going to be a little more inconvenienced, but if you read the text of the bill, and like we've talked about and like we've gone through some of the committees, this bill is easy to comply with. It's easy to comply with, but we're all going to have to learn some new ways of doing things. We're addicted to this. We all are. We walk around the hallways looking at texts, bumping into people, and we're doing the same thing on the roads. People aren't just texting anymore. Heck, the Highway Patrol stopped a guy the other day that was trading stocks. People are paying bills while they're driving down the road. They're Snapchatting. They're Facebooking. This is epidemic, and it's because we are addicted to phones. We have to have some guidelines. We have to have some guardrails, and that's what this bill does. I really feel that this bill is the right thing to do. That's why I'm doing it. I don't like writing laws that we don't need. And I think many of us in this room feel the same way. We don't need any more laws so often. But we are state representatives, and we are charged with taking care of our constituents and the people of Minnesota. And this is the right bill at the right time, and I urge your support for it. And Representative Hornstein and Representative Neuberger have some brief comments. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and a big thanks to Representative Uglem, who's really shepherded this along. And also, I owe a debt of gratitude, I think we all do, to the families who have come here. They mourn their loved ones, and they honor their loved ones by being here. And the families have moved this along through the committee process, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Members, I've been around the legislature now 16 years, and I can't think of a bill that has had this degree of bipartisan support. I think we're over 20 Democrats and 20 Republicans that are co-authors of this bill. And I think that speaks to the depth of feeling that Minnesotans have about the importance and centrality of this issue. This is the fastest growing source of death and injury on our highways. And so the time is now, the urgency is now to get this bill passed. And so I wanted to thank you again, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill, and I'll pass it on to Representative Neuberger. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And again, I would like to thank Representatives Uglem and Hornstein for bringing this bill forward. All of you know here on the committee my background, 30-year full-time paramedic, level one trauma center. Folks at home might not know that. So my experience with distracted driving is upfront and personal. In my district, I have had at least 5 fatalities related to distracted driving. One of these episodes I was personally at. There was a family in my district in the minivan that got T-boned at highway speeds by a young person who was looking at Facebook. Their van was almost torn in half. The dad was killed immediately. One of the young girls in the car, he had kids in the car, unfortunately lost her life a few days later. And I was there. And some of my partners that I currently work with were there as well. To say it was disturbing is an understatement. Folks, this is happening on our roads, and it's happening every day. And what I want, the point that I want to make to my fellow conservative members is, I want to remind everyone in Minnesota that driving is not a right. Driving is a privilege. Our Constitution gives us one of the rights that's stated in our Constitution is the right to life. And right now what we have is a privilege, driving, that is infringing upon a right, which is life. Now, I spend a lot of time on the phone in the car, but I do it hands-free. And that's what this bill will do. We're not taking away anyone's privilege to talk on the phone. What we're saying is that we want to make it safer. This is no different than putting a guardrail up or a street sign or a stoplight. We're not taking anything away. We're just making it safer. And as a side note, I also look forward to this going through because my insurance rates have gone up, no fault of my own. Because of the people that are driving and having accidents, I have to pay for all of these other crashes that are taking place. This is costing all of us a lot of money. And the insurance industry, I'm sure, is here to testify on that behalf. But members, I just encourage your support. And I just want to remind the members here and the people at home that driving is not a right, it's a privilege, and all we're trying to do is make it safer to protect your right. Thank you.
All right. I think I'd like to first call forward Colonel Langer with the Minnesota State Patrol. Colonel Langer, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Matt Langer. I have the honor and privilege of serving as the Chief of the Minnesota State Patrol. I'll be brief. I come here to testify on behalf of the Department of Public Safety and the State Patrol in support of this bill. We happen to believe it's a necessary and good behavior change for Minnesotans to put the phone down and concentrate on driving. Nothing in the bill prevents people from talking on the phone. There's debate about whether that's a distraction in and of itself, but it's a common misconception with this bill. It doesn't prevent that. From an enforcement perspective, I will tell you what the troopers tell me all the time is they see someone going down the road looking at their phone. And, of course, we have a law today that makes texting while driving illegal. So troopers will take action. They'll act on that law. They'll stop that driver, and they'll say, I saw you. I believe you were texting on the phone, texting while driving, and frequently they encounter the person saying, no, I wasn't texting, I was looking for a phone number. No, I wasn't texting, I was putting an address in on my GPS. Whether they're telling the truth or not, I guess, is dependent upon the situation. But from an enforcement perspective, what this allows us to do in the enforcement world is to better enforce the current existing law that bans texting while driving. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them, but we stand in support of this bill from the Department of Public Safety and believe it to be a necessary behavioral change. We would be the 17th state if this became law, Georgia being number 16, so it certainly isn't new and novel around the country, and those states that have enacted the law have seen positive gains in their traffic safety, which means lives are saved.
Are there any questions for Colonel Langer? Thank you, Colonel Langer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, next I'd ask Greg and Sylvie Tikalski to come forward. Greg and Sylvie, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please give us your testimony. First, start with your name so that we've got that on tape, and then go ahead.
Okay. My name is Sylvie Tikalski.
Go ahead, Sylvie.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I wish there was time for everyone here, too, because everyone has a story. I'm 18 years old, and I'm looking forward to voting in the next election. In 2 weeks, I will be graduating, but my grandpa won't be with me on this special day. On the morning of October 28th, 2015, it was a normal school day until I got called down to the office. I knew that something had been wrong because I was greeted by my dad and a couple of police officers. I could tell that they had been crying. My dad eventually broke the news to me that my grandpa was struck and killed while getting his morning newspaper. He was hit by a driver who was replying to her daughter's text message. My memory of that morning was watching my dad tell my grandma the heartbreaking news that my grandpa was killed and standing in front of her kitchen window so she wouldn't have to see her husband laying in the ditch in her front yard. Since that day, when I got my license, I made a promise to my grandpa that I would never use my phone while driving. I know my grandpa would be proud of me. If my grandpa wouldn't have been killed, I would probably be like everyone else my age and use my phone. Even though it's illegal until the age of 18, almost everyone does it. You see it every day on the roads. It's a habit to have our phones in our hands most of the day. So when someone gets in the car, why would they put their phone down? It is a norm to continue that behavior. This epidemic has become an addiction. It's not just talking on the phone. With one swipe of a thumb, you can easily access Snapchat, Facebook, send text messages, and play games. Since his death, I've been speaking at driver's ed classes, neighboring schools, I've been a part of the Distracted Driving Awareness Kickoff Program, a speaker at the Tour Zero Death Convention, trying to educate the public on the dangers of distracted driving, and I also testified at the Capitol last year for the hands-free bill. I will be speaking in Iowa this Saturday with a driver who killed a mother of two in Laverne, Minnesota. I always offer cell slips to the group I'm speaking to whenever I speak, only if they sign the pledge not to use their phones while they drive. We also provide a fact sheet with statistics because I always want to make people aware of the important facts. I never imagined that this is what I would be doing during my high school years, but I know that it is the right thing to do. I am not alone in my effort. This room is full of families who are educating the public trying to keep our roads safer. Many have been speaking much longer than our family. Yet our club continues to grow. 3 months after Grandpa was killed, I was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. I'm not telling you this to make this about me. I want you to know how fragile life is. No one could have prevented this from happening to me. But Grandpa's life could have 100% been prevented. Even my doctors at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester have also signed the pledge that they will not text and drive. Minnesota wants a hands-free law. Please vote yes and move this bill to the floor. It's the right thing to do. It is absolutely selfish to put your own agenda in front of what the people of Minnesota are asking for while you watch us bury our loved ones. Minnesotans are asking you to take the phones out of our hands. Don't let a few legislators decide our fate. So many deaths can be prevented. It's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tucholsky.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch and committee members. On behalf of all the members of our club, I sincerely thank you for hearing the bill this morning. My name is Greg Tucholsky. The story of Sisyphus is from Greek mythology. It's a story of a man cursed to push a boulder to the top of a hill. Every time he got to the top, the boulder would roll back down the hill, and he was forced to repeat the exercise. Just imagine every day pushing a boulder up a hill, only to see it roll back down, up, down, up, down. How futile and meaningless. Those of us who have worked for the passage of the hands-free bill sense the frustration and futility of Sisyphus. Some among us believe committee hearings are an attempt to pacify an angry group of people, only to have legislative leadership at the very top tell the media the bill ran out of time. I'm not sure what you want to hear from us that would actually convince you to support the bill, because we've given it all. Is it that the bill doesn't infringe upon our individual rights? Is it that the bill has saved lives in other states? Is it that public opinion supports the bill? We've presented all of these. I've even told the story of my father, Joe Tucholsky, to countless legislators. I have the jacket, a jacket similar to the one that he wore when he was struck and killed that morning as he walked to get his morning newspaper. My dad had a good smile, but this is my last memory of my dad, lying in a blanket under a ditch, or lying under a blanket in a ditch next to a field that he farmed his entire life. And this is the one that's burned in my memory. After hearing legislative leadership speak to the media, these things don't seem to matter, anything I've just spoken of. So my testimony to you is an appeal on a different level. It's an appeal to you to challenge leadership at the top to accept the reality that hands-free needs its day on the floor, because it's what the people want. Unfortunately, we can't get through to the leadership. In some cases, they just don't respond. Since April 2017, my family has contacted Senate Majority Leader Paul Gajelka over 30 times and have not heard from him yet. His media page says he wants to hear both sides of the issues. Maybe he's hearing them, but he's not responding. And that's not the answer a family wants to hear. 13 months without a response. Please, I'm asking for 80 seconds of your time. 1 second for each foot that my dad's body was thrown once the vehicle struck him. On Wednesday, May 2nd, Majority Leader Gajelka created a Facebook poll. He wrote, "I want to hear from you." 5,000 Minnesotans responded in 7 days. 81% said they favor a hands-free bill. 19 were opposed. A couple days after his poll went out, he said, "It's building momentum, but I don't think it's going to get done this year." 3 days later, he says, "It's losing momentum, not likely to pass." Losing momentum? What happened in 3 days? His Facebook poll results are nearly identical to the Star Tribune poll run 1 year ago. In the same interview, he went on to compare this hands-free bill to the Sunday liquor sales. I'd equate it more to the bill that you're going to be hearing next on the opioid addiction, because that's the level this one's at. We're tired of the stall tactics. I want to thank you for hearing. This bill could save lives. You have the power to break the cycle of Sisyphus. Take the boulder out of our hands. Please vote for the hands-free bill and talk to your leadership. Once the hands-free bill passes, those who stood against it will be ashamed to be reminded of the flimsy excuses they used to oppose it. Thank you for hearing us this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Tucholsky. Anyone have any questions? Does anyone have any questions for Greg or Sylvia Tucholsky? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, not a question, just really to thank you and to thank everybody who's here advocating for this. I'm one of the co-authors from early on, and that was really powerful, and we really deeply appreciate it. And more importantly, people who aren't here, who don't, we don't even know, will appreciate it, and they won't even know about your advocacy, but I believe it really is making a difference, so thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I want to sort of reiterate Representative Liebling's comments, and I really appreciate Representative Uglum's work on this, because as you and I have kind of stood arm in arm with dealing with stuff that we hate dealing with, and that's loss of life. And as I prepare myself for the opioid conversation, I'm just, again, proud to be one of your co-authors early on when it wasn't easy and wasn't popular. But when I have a beautiful young boy from Wilmer that was killed a few years ago, Robert Brow, that is lost for the same reason, we need to do something. And I think the problem is government, we shouldn't have to get involved. But after all the public service announcements that I've heard on the radio and the newspaper and all the stuff we've tried to get done, it's not getting done. It isn't changing because people aren't taking it seriously enough until we step in. And sometimes we as a body need to do that. And every year we don't do this is a whole bunch of more lives that aren't being educated properly. And unfortunately, we're going to have to make some examples from people that don't get it until they're in jail or something seriously happens that isn't happening now. So can't thank you enough for bringing this forward, but this is the right place for this, and we're going to get this thing done. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Loon, then Vogel. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much to the family and for being here, for sharing your story. I'm so very sorry for your loss, and I know you speak for a room full of people who have experienced the same thing. I'm proud to be a co-author of this bill. Thank you, Representative Uglum. You came to my district at Mr. V.J. Dixit with the Sharia Dixit Foundation, who's from Eden Prairie. I see you in the audience as well, who has talked to me about the loss of his daughter and how he has committed really his life to sharing the dangers of distracted driving. And I just want to, I hear the frustration that you expressed with the legislative process. And it can be slow, and it can be seeming to be backwards motion and then forward and that. So, and legislators share in that frustration. There's a lot of good ideas that get stymied. But I just want you to know that your persistence is paying off. And I think you are changing opinions and that. So I hope you won't get discouraged, and thank you again for your steadfast efforts in moving this forward.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Initially, I wasn't one of the authors on this bill, and Representative Uglum and I sit next to each other in state government finance. He presented it to me, and being of a mindset that we already have too many regulations on the books, I wasn't initially enamored with the idea of another one. But as this process went on and the involvement of the people, and that's the point I'd like to make, is that this to me is a reflection of citizen government. This wasn't something that initially, like I said, that I would get excited about adding more regulation. But as I listened to or watched the emails come in, talk to the people, and then talk to the author, it became apparent that, and I think Representative Neuberger's comments as well, that driving is a privilege, not a right. I came to the conclusion, and I appreciate the testifiers and all of the people that have been involved in this, because, again, I say this is true reflection of citizen government. These are people that came forward and persevered, and I think that's the key here, is that they persevered in an effort that's changed minds. And because of this, I have, from an initial hesitation to becoming a co-author, I appreciate all of the efforts of the testifiers as well as the people here that have brought this issue to light. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Greg.
I was just going to comment. Okay. I've been supportive of this legislation probably from the get-go, but I was just going to relate a personal experience. I was in rural Hennepin County on a two-lane road, and behind this car, and the fellow was crossing over the center lane. He was speeding up, slowing down, and I quite frankly thought I was behind a drunk driver. And finally, there was an opportunity to pull up alongside and around, and the fellow was just talking away on his cell phone and oblivious to what he was doing in traffic and the risks that he was taking. There could have easily been the way he was crossing over the center line head on. Now, fortunately, there was not an accident, but just an observation, and maybe an observation that many of us here have had. When you see people talking on the cell phone, they just get totally into the conversation, and they're just not paying attention, and they're putting the lives of innocent people at risk when they're doing that. So I thank you for your testimony as well.
Representative Babian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Uglum, for bringing this forward, and to the families, thank you for your testimony. Nobody in this building drives more miles than I do to get home. I spend 13 hours a week on the road to get back to Roseau, Minnesota. And Representative Uglum knows full well that when he calls me or sends me a text message, I've got a device that allows me to talk to him or to even tell it to read my text messages. It does it for you. You can be hands-free in this world today. There is zero reason to have your phone in your hand. The technology today allows you very simply for one-fifth of what my monthly mobile phone bill is to be able to get connected. It even reads my emails to me. And when you're driving for 6.5 hours one way, it gets to be a boring ride. And so thank you. I do support this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Greg and Sylvie Tkalski.
Thank you for your support.
Yes, thank you. We really appreciate it.
Members, as you know, underneath House rules, we are required to take testimony of at least one person for, and if there are people against, one person against each bill. We do have one person that contacted me this morning that wished to testify against the bill. And so if that individual would come forward. Brett Collier.
Supreme Court Justice Lothrop.
Mr. Collier, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Could you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Good morning. Brett Collier. I'm from Big Lake, Minnesota, and I work as an engineering consultant in the nuclear industry and sit before you simply as a concerned citizen. On May 4th of this month, I sent you all an email detailing my opposition to this proposed legislation. With the assumption that you have all read my earlier correspondence, my testimony today will be more to the point and less politically correct. This bill and its Senate counterpart was penned based upon no evidence to support the author's conclusions. When these bills were first introduced, I asked for the evidence to show how holding one's phone to their ear was so distractive that contributed to any of the 74 distracted driving deaths that occurred in Minnesota in 2015. No one in the legislature or at the state level could supply me that evidence. I then, on my own, contacted the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and downloaded their detailed information and found that for Minnesota in 2015, only two of the 74 distracted driving deaths were attributed to talking or listening to a cell phone. And note that this category encompasses both the holding of one's phone to their ear and using a hands-free device. So this tells me that per the data, which I've previously shared with the authors, the act of talking on a phone while driving is no more a lethal distraction than eating or playing with the radio, activities which you are currently not attempting to make illegal. I then have to wonder how it is possible that I, simply a concerned citizen, was able to locate this National Highway Traffic Safety Administration data and the authors of these bills had not. Because if they had, they too would have realized that the data does not support their assertions that making it illegal to hold a phone in their hand and talk would produce a meaningful reduction in the distracted driving deaths in the state. This legislation, the only thing that this legislation will do is create a new revenue stream for counties, states, and the legal profession. If you're going to write new legislation to help reduce the needless distracted driving deaths, let's write some legislation that will actually make a difference. I would think that what the citizen proponents of this bill actually want, that's what they would actually want. I've seen them here at committee meetings, in the House Rotunda, in the State House Rotunda, holding photos of their loved ones lost. I've heard them describe the distractions that took place that led to their losses. I personally have yet to hear it described how the distracted driver was simply talking on their phone. I've only heard from those proponent cases where the driver was texting, emailing, Facebooking. So again, let's write some legislation that goes after the problem. It's already illegal to text, email, and access the Internet while driving in Minnesota, but apparently the penalty is not harsh enough to be a deterrent. Let's make the penalties harsher. Some in law enforcement support this legislation because they say it's difficult to prove that one was texting as opposed to simply dialing their phone. Well, let's compare this to the DWI laws. If I get pulled over, suspected of drunk driving, I can refuse to take the offered sobriety test. I can refuse to take the breathalyzer. Will the officer simply let me go? Not if he or she believes that I'm impaired. I will be going to jail until I comply or a warrant is issued. Why should it not be the same for texting and driving? If the officer believes that I was texting, we should have a streamlined procedure for acquiring a warrant and checking the suspect's individual phone to see what they are actually doing with it. As I said, fines should be harsher. In Vermont, the state I grew up in, the first offense has a fine up to $250. The second offense, up to $500. In Minnesota, not until your second violation are you required to pay a fine, and that fine is only $225. Some proponents will point to data actually from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, that they say shows that when states implement a hands-free ban, that distracted driving deaths decrease. Maybe on the surface, but what's the whole story behind their interpretation of this data? Again, in Vermont, if I'm reading their historical statutes correctly, a texting ban was initiated in 2010 for construction and school zones. In 2013, the texting ban was expanded to cover all roads and a hands-free ban was implemented. So you can't say that the simple addition of a hands-free ban resulted in reduction of distracted driving deaths in Vermont. And I've only looked into Vermont's situation. Plus, you have to consider the effects of education on the public on the dangers of texting and driving when assessing any drop in distracted driving deaths. I have more I could say, but I will simply restate that the problem is not holding the phone to your ear and talking. It's texting, emailing, Facebooking, Snapchatting. If you're going to pass any legislation to actually reduce cell phone-related distracted driving deaths, let's pass something that will actually do something and not just criminalize an action that is not the problem, which simply creates a new revenue stream for states, counties, and lawyers. Thank you for your time.
Are there questions for Mr. Collier? Mr. Collier, thank you for your testimony. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have the Minnesota Insurance Federation and the Truckers Association that could possibly give us a few statistics about this.
Yeah, you know, Representative Uglum, I think what I'm going to do in the interest of time, I know you've had them testify in previous committees and policy committees. Again, this is the Ways and Means Committee.
Yep.
I think at this point, just in the interest of time, we should move on without their testimony.
Okay. I have a few concluding remarks, then, sir.
So, I think discussion to the bill. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Uglum, I have two questions. First of all, do you know the status of this bill in the Senate?
Representative Uglum.
Representative Erdahl, it is in, I believe, the Rules Committee at this point in time.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Uglum, one of the questions that I've received from people about this bill is the, it's from truck drivers, the effect that it will have on truck drivers who maybe have a lot of things going on, using their GPS, trying to find places that they need to deliver a load to. Could you assure the truck drivers how this would affect them?
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl. Yes, we did have a little chance to talk offline on this some time ago. This bill does not do anything in terms of restricting GPS, okay, whether you're using your cell phone as a GPS or whether you have GPS. Secondly, all commercial truck drivers, if you have a commercial vehicle license, all of them, every single one of them in the United States has to be hands-free. A lot of this text that's in the bill follows some of those national rules. So truckers already are hands-free, and GPS is okay under this bill.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Uglum. One of the concerns was that some of the trucks are older models and don't have some of the functions that the newer trucks do in terms of hands-free options. So does it grandfather in any older vehicles or anything like that?
Representative Uglum.
Representative Erdahl, if you wanted to use your phone as a GPS device, all you need to do is affix it to the dash, and then you can use it under this bill. That was a change that came out of judiciary on the Senate side. So there really should be no problems with older trucks, older cars, or anything.
Representative Hornstein.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just also want to say that the Minnesota Trucking Association is in strong support of this legislation.
All right. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to comment kind of in response to the gentleman who spoke in opposition, just to say that, you know, public policy, we often don't have the kind of evidence that you may have, say, if you're testing a drug to see if it works. You can't do the kind of controlled experiments that you can do in some other settings. And so sometimes we need to try to strike a balance and try to do the best we can. And it appears to me that this bill really does try to strike a balance. Now, I just wanted to comment that the testifier mentioned his potential solution was to raise penalties. And I would just like to say that there's really very little evidence that that would make a difference, although we often do that to try to prevent conduct we don't like, right? But there's really very little evidence that that would have the impact either. So, you know, while, you know, his point may be a good one, that some of the states that have dropped, where the deaths have dropped off, it may be that they've done a combination of other things. Nevertheless, a difference has been made. And it also, just for everyone's point, you know, it's not as though once and done with legislation like this. You know, we can come back, we'll see how it works in Minnesota. If it needs tweaking, we'll tweak it. I think that, you know, as long as we, in a bipartisan way, really are focused on saving the lives of Minnesotans, that is what matters. And if the legislation doesn't work as intended, I think that it's pretty safe to say that in future years we will come back and fix it and make sure that it does, because this is just simply too important to find reasons to stop ourselves from doing this. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Uglum, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we've heard some compelling testimony, and we have overwhelming support for this bill. The media, I think, has done a wonderful job explaining this, and the reflective polls of almost 80% of Minnesotans feeling that this bill should pass. I think it's indisputable that we have to act And you know what? I'd like the House to lead on this. We both know, we all know, it's got to go through the Senate also. But I hope that we can lead and we can show our colleagues in the Senate that this is an important issue for Minnesotans. Where else do you get this many people at 8 o'clock in the morning for a hearing, huh? Good people that have been wronged. So we have to act, and we have to provide safety on our roads. It's the biggest single factor out there today, and we can do it, and we can make our roads safer. We can give law enforcement the tools they need, and I think we can save lives. So many other states have done it. It's our turn. It's our time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Uglum. With that, the chair will renew his motion that House File 1180, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. House File 1180, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's right. It works good. I've got a garment.
Representative Corkelson. The next bill on the agenda is House File 4437. Representative Torkelson moves that House File 4437 be referred to the General Register. Representative Torkelson, could you present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing this bill this morning. House File 4437 is the bill that would put a constitutional question on the ballot this fall, asking voters whether or not they approve constitutionally dedicate the use of sales tax dollars for road construction projects in the state of Minnesota. I will briefly describe the bill, Mr. Chair, in the interest of time. I know you have another important bill ahead of us. Most of us have heard this bill once or twice already. It has been through a number of committees. My own House Transportation Finance Committee has heard the bill. The Rules Committee has heard the bill. And taxes have heard the bill, and we took extensive testimony in all of those committees. The Article 1 of the bill describes the language that would be in the Constitution. I would just make sure that you note a couple of things about that language. One is that it does regard the legacy tax and make sure that we don't affect that and cause any complications with a 3/8 cent legacy. Article 1 of the bill also includes the question that would be on the ballot as it would be printed in this fall's election. Article 2 of the bill includes both statutory and session law that describe the details of how this would be implemented. There's a 4.5% allocation to small cities. That other 95.5% goes to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And the portion of that that goes into the Trunk Highway Fund would then be deposited in a construction account, aiming these funds at work on roads and bridges across the state. The last portion of the bill, Section 5, details how this would be rolled in over a period of time. We would only reach full funding by fiscal year 2025. With that, Mr. Chair, I've described briefly the bill, and I'd be happy to take questions or if you have testifiers.
There are a couple people that contacted us about testifying, so I think I'll take testimony now, and then we'll go to questions. I have Jason George and Abby Brydeck. If Mr. George could come forward first, if he's here.
All right, Jason.
Mr. George, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jason George. I'm the Legislative Director for the Operating Engineers, Local 49. I work for 13,500 heavy equipment operators that build and maintain the infrastructure for our state. I want to thank Chair Torkelson for his leadership in bringing this important and thoughtful proposal forward. In our view, he's a true champion for infrastructure in the state. We want to thank him for that. In our view, the constitutional amendment before you makes common sense. Dedicating a user fee that is less than 1% of the state budget and also is phased in over 5 years' time to what should be one of the core functions of government, which is building our state's infrastructure, is prudent and a reasonable thing to do. That's probably why the polling that we've done shows that 76% of Minnesotans would vote for this amendment if we put it on the ballot. If passed and supported by the public, this amendment will create thousands of good-paying jobs, jobs that will feed families and raise kids, and that should matter more than they seem to right now. It's a frustrating time for those of us that care about the infrastructure jobs and care about infrastructure jobs and the people that work them. It really feels like, honestly, that we can't build anything in this state without an overcharged debate. It's really hard for people, our members included, but I think everybody, to understand why that is. Our members build and maintain the things that allow the rest of us to live our lives the way we do. We should all think more about how we got to a place where infrastructure jobs and projects are so controversial. Honestly, it's been hard to listen to the debate over this amendment. I've heard that if we do this, we're going to close schools. We're going to be, teachers will be fired. Elderly folks will be kicked off out of their nursing homes. Of course, none of that will happen if this passes. And in fact, you know, right now we are in budget surplus times. The amendment is phased in over 5 years. If there are future challenges in this legislature with the budget, future legislatures can certainly act to make sure those things don't happen. The tone of this conversation has taken is why we need dedicated sources of revenue for infrastructure. The people of Minnesota can't afford to have this kind of paralyzing debate over these projects. We need to stop spending time politicizing infrastructure. Instead, we need to get started rebuilding our state, which is desperately needed. You can help do that by supporting this bill and allowing the people of Minnesota to decide whether or not we can afford to spend a small percentage of our budget on their transportation infrastructure, and we hope that you will. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. George. Any questions for Mr. George? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. George. Mr. George, back in 2013 and 2014, the House DFL refused to pass tax increases to fund transportation, roads and bridges. They did pass tax increases for other things, but they would not pass tax increases for road and bridge construction. Now, the House Democrats are opposed to using existing funds for additional road and bridge construction. My question for you, Mr. George, is that if the House DFL is going to oppose tax increases for new road and bridge construction, and they're going to oppose existing funds for new roads and bridge construction, how are we supposed to do anything about bridges and roads?
Mr. Chair, Chairman Garofalo, you just expressed our frustration, and I don't have a good answer for you on that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, is there any member of the House DFL who can tell me about a different option other than raising taxes for road and bridges or using existing funds for roads and bridges to get new resources into the transportation system? Because when you guys had total control, you didn't raise taxes on that. You raised taxes on lots of other things, but you went to it for roads and bridges, and now you're saying the existing funds can't be done. Can someone give me a third option that Mr. George and I are missing?
Representative Hausman, did you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the testifier. But triggering that, I guess I would add a little bit to the question I was going to have for the testifier.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were responding to Representative Garofalo.
Yes. Yeah, I am.
I'll recognize you. Go ahead.
I am,
yeah.
And then
all right.
The testifier. We currently have the following funding streams that flow to transportation: gas tax, license tabs, motor vehicle sales tax, property tax, wheelage tax, sales tax, and federal money that comes in every year. Those streams of funding flow regularly to transportation. And now that that is not enough, rather than adjusting the level of them, and I believe that there is support from many sectors in increasing one of those streams of funding, we are going after yet another one, and that is the general fund. To the testifier, I wonder if you could help me, since you've tracked this for some time. I just referenced a number of other constitutionally dedicated streams of funding for transportation, And now this bill seeks yet another constitutionally dedicated stream. Why transportation deserves constitutional dedication when education does not?
Mr. George.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think those are decisions for you to make, but I would say that the reason why we're here today is because legislatures in the past, including as Representative Garofalo points out, when either party was in control, have not funded transportation. It's one of the two things in the Constitution that I think the state is directed to do, and we are not doing the job. So we've tried many other solutions, including our organization has supported raising the gas tax, the existing dedicated sources that you mentioned. It has not worked, no matter who's in charge of this body. And we feel like dedicated resources are necessary for transportation because of exactly the debate that we're having here. This is a core function of government, something we need to do. And this is a user fee. Auto parts sales tax we wouldn't have if there weren't roads. So that's my response. Thanks.
And Mr. Chair, I guess to the committee.
Okay, Representative Hulseman.
To the committee and the author, here's the downside of this. If this is popular and it passes, the public will believe they solved the transportation problem. And when that's not enough, which it won't be, because this the dollar amount, we know, is small, and we, again, seek another increase for transportation, to solve transportation, the public will say, well, we just passed a constitutional dedication. I mean, we solved the transportation problem. That's the downside of what this is attempting to do. It still won't solve the problem, but the public will think they did because they voted for it. So there's a downside to this solution.
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hausman. First, the question of why constitutional dedication. I've asked myself that question many times. But for some reason, our legislators of the past decided that constitutionally dedicating resources to transportation was a proper route to go. And once we've gone down that path of what you've just described, the challenge of getting increased funding for transportation does exist because of dedicated funding. But we put ourselves in a box at this point. We need to make sure that we have more resources for transportation. And this next step, and it is another step, I agree with you, is an important one that lends at least a certain amount of predictability to the amount of funds that are available for transportation so that folks like Mr. George here and his colleagues know that there'll be more projects coming down the line every year that we can keep on doing the work that we need to do to make our roads safe.
All right, at this point I'd like to take, thank you, Mr. George, Ms. Brydock. Ms. Brydock, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Abby Brydock. I'm the Government Affairs Director at the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. I would amplify many of Mr. George's comments and just would like to speak a little bit from the construction industry perspective about project planning and how to deliver the best projects for the state. I would say that efficiency in order to get the best and most efficient prices, deliver projects in the most efficient way, stable funding is absolutely essential and the most important element. In fact, we just had a discussion. One of the reasons we can't rely on fits and starts in our funding programs is we just had a discussion yesterday about planning for the Blatnik, replacing the Blatnik Bridge. And this is probably, we're talking about a 10-year program where we can't, we need to know how much money we're having in that amount of time. We can't go year by year depending on general fund contributions, bonding bills, and et cetera. So really transportation is just a different animal, and many of you who have been involved in transportation funding for years know that. But not everyone does. We try to stick as close as possible as we can to user fees. That's why sales tax on auto parts makes logical sense. It has been going to the general fund, but we think maybe it shouldn't have been. Maybe this should be going to transportation. And again, for those of us who've been working in transportation for many years, yes, we have many funds, but they have just become politically difficult to raise, whether it's tab fees or gas tax. Many of you know we've raised the gas tax two times in 30 years. And, you know, if we looked at other areas of funding and said we've only raised education funding two times in 30 years, they'd be looking for different funding sources, too. We are really stuck here and looking for some different options that make sense. The legislature could certainly come back and look at our general fund, and if there were some new funding needs for health care or education, there are other revenue sources that could be raised just as well as the gas tax could be raised. There are many options on the table. We're disappointed that this has really been boiled down to an either-or proposition. We can solve all our problems if we don't rule out other options. So, everyone says we need good roads, but no one seems to prioritize it, and that's why we need to set aside these funds so that we can really put our money where our mouth is and make sure that we have a safe and effective infrastructure system. Thank you.
Questions to the witness, Representative Lubling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question to the witness, but I really wanted to respond a little bit to Representative Garofalo and his colorful statements there. You know, I actually don't mind constitutionally dedicated funding for transportation because I do realize that there's a long-term aspect to the planning that goes on here and that having a reliable funding stream is important. However, the problem really isn't, I do agree with Representative Hausman that the problem here is that it misleads the public, and we did this once before, not that long ago, where we do this constitutional thing and then the public thinks it's solved and it's not. So I think there's that. I think the real problem here is not whether it's dedicated or not. The problem is that the Republican majority doesn't have any problem taking money out of the general fund in the future, and this grows in the future, big, big bite out of the general fund. And then if it wasn't impossible to raise a tax, that wouldn't be a problem. But I seem to remember that back when in the time period when that Representative Garofalo is talking about, boy, well, he certainly didn't support raising that tax. It was, you know, this is a two-sided thing because the opposition goes after us for any tax increase. The Republican majority never met a tax increase it liked. Shifting money around, no problem. Taking money out of funds that weren't intended for one thing to go to another thing, no problem. But just never will ever raise a tax because, you know, that would be growing government. And the reality that transportation needs more money and is going to need more in the future, that never seems to cross the radar for the Republican majority. So Representative Garofalo can, you know, make these colorful statements, but the reality is that this is going to cause a problem in the future, not in and of itself, but because when the big hole exists, the Republicans in this legislature will be unwilling to raise any more money for those purposes and will complain that the DFL will want to raise taxes because there won't be enough for education and there won't be enough for health care. And then it'll be the opportunity to cut those items. So I really think of this, we have to think about what's happening on the federal level with Republicans in charge of our U.S. government, too. It's the same dynamic. Pass a tax bill that cuts corporate taxes for the largest corporations that creates a $2 trillion deficit. And then go back and say, oh, my goodness, we don't have enough money for Social Security. We don't have enough money for Medicaid and Medicare. And now we have to start cutting those things. That's the dynamic that we're going to see and that we do see here in this legislature, too. It's really the same dynamic. Create deficits and then wring our hands and say, no, my goodness, we have to cut education. You know, we have to cut helping people who, you know, elderly people in nursing homes. We just can't afford those things. So that's what's going to happen, Representative Garofalo.
Representative Garofalo, your name was used many times, so I think we need to recognize you and let you make a response. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Liebling, you've made a tactical error here, and that is I am the world's number one best expert on the planet in what I think. So, number one, Representative Liebling, I have voted in favor of increasing the gas tax because it's in favor of roads and bridges. That's not what the debate is about. In addition, you have also voted in favor of taking money out of the general fund and putting it into roads, bridges, and transit. You voted with me to constitutionally dedicate the motor vehicle sales tax. constitutionally dedicated to road and bridge as well as transit funding in our first term. So the arguments you are making are so factually inaccurate, I have to point those out. But Representative Liebling, you're not answering the original question I asked, which I understand. In 2013, you had total control of the government. To the Senate DFL's credit, they raised a ton of transportation taxes to take care of roads and bridges. With a budget surplus, the House DFL couldn't put any money into roads, couldn't use any of the surplus for that, and you couldn't raise taxes to put money into roads and bridges. So if you're not going to put tax increases into roads and bridges, and you're not going to use existing funds for it, then is the House DFL's plan just to do nothing? I thought you accused us of being the party of no. It sounds like the House DFL's plan for roads and bridges are to let the roads crumble, let the bridges crumble, and then just propose that we build more trains. That's what it sounds like to me, because if you're not going to use existing funds and you ain't going to raise revenue for it, you're going to have a heck of a time convincing me there's another solution. Thank you.
Okay, well, members, I wasn't here in 2013 and 14, and I'm not interested in hearing any more about what happened during those years. So at least right now. So with us having a heavy schedule today, I don't see any other questions for Ms. Breidich. Thank you very much for your testimony. We, having had two people who have testified in favor of the bill, we, I think, did have some others that wanted to testify that we just heard about, but I'm going to leave it at the two testifiers that we had. Discussion to the bill, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my first opportunity to have a conversation with Representative Torkelson about this bill. And what I'm trying to figure out is what is your vision for Minnesota and our economy going forward, and how does this fit? And the reason I'm asking is it only provides for roads and bridges, no transit, which is part of our economy, and even for the roads and bridges, MnDOT's telling us this is not what they need. So what's the vision here for Minnesota's economy?
Well, thank you.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius. Well, if you listen closely to MnDOT, they're not saying they don't need more money. They are saying they do need more money. They seem to have some political objection to the way we're resourcing these funds. That's their choice. I don't understand that myself, but that's their choice. The truth is the gas tax is not going to be a dependable resource in the future. The experts that I've listened to, and I've read many articles and heard many speakers say, depending on the gas tax, long range is not a good choice because cars are getting more efficient. We're seeing more electric vehicles. It's just not a good resource. So we need to look to other resources. The fact that we are kind of trapped in this dilemma of constitutional dedication is kind of an uncomfortable one, frankly. But that's what was decided many years ago, that we would set aside a pile of money for transportation constitutionally. The pile isn't big enough anymore, and so we've made the choice that we're going to give the voters of Minnesota a chance to decide whether or not they believe adding more resources to that constitutionally dedicated pile is appropriate or not. I am not describing this as the be-all, end-all resource for transportation funding. I am not opposed to transit funding, but we fully funded transit last year in the current biennium, and to the point where Met Council has more surplus in hand than even their own guidelines require. So we're in good shape there, and I believe this is the proper route. And also, you know, the transit depends on roads and bridges, too. A bus needs a road to drive on. A bicycle even needs a road to drive on if they're driving legally in most cases. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We do have one other person who just
Chair,
alerted us that they wanted
like
to testify against the bill. So I'd like to have Commissioner McDonough come down. And Representative Wagenius, so we can take up the discussion when we get back to the bill. Commissioner McDonough, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jim McDonough, Ramsey County Commissioner, Chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners. I've been a county commissioner for 18 years. For 18 years, I've been up at this legislature advocating for comprehensive, balanced, dedicated funding for roads, bridges, and transit. For the last 14 of those years, I've worked extremely hard to bring advocates, unions, cities, counties, schools, legislators together to support those investments in roads, bridges, and transit. We did that when we did the constitutional amendment for the dedication of MBES. There was unity around that. We worked together. We did that when we worked on the 2008 bill. Moving this forward on the constitutional dedication is driving division amongst those partners that have advocated for years and years and years. It's driving division amongst our working folks. It's driving division from business to local government. It's driving division within everybody who has worked and committed to these investments. Talk about right now with the current surplus, if this constitutional dedication of funds was fully implemented this year, you would go from a surplus to a deficit immediately. So when the talk of there will be cuts, this will affect other parts of government that we support, is real. You can say it's not, or you can say we'll deal with it in 2024, 2025. As an elected official, one of the most important lessons I've learned is some of the hardest decisions I have to make is planting the seed of the tree that will provide shade that I will never benefit from. This is digging a hole that none of you will be around to help prevent people from falling into or helping to fill. I don't disagree one bit that we need dedicated funding for roads, bridges, and transit. This, we need to do more work so that when there is a bill, we are standing up here united, that we are working together, that there is something here that works for all of us in this state. As a county commissioner, I have to support the safety net services as everybody in Ramsey County that comes into a crisis, whether it's mental health, whatever that service is. I cannot pit a mom or an individual family member, their best interest, against funding roads and bridges and transit, even though that is one of my number one priorities. So I ask you, vote your conscience, really reflect on what this is going to do to our state. We don't need to give up. We can continue to work. We've got a lot of folks in this room that are committed to that. Make us go back to the table and come back to you with something that works for all of us. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right. Thank you, committee members, for listening.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the testifier, I'm wondering if the testifier could tell me, last year when Hennepin and Ramsey County raised the sales tax and put 100% of that money into transit and didn't put one penny into roads, did that sow division within the transportation community?
A couple things to that. One is we put property tax levy into roads and bridges. We've been doing that for years because there has not been enough money coming from the state. So we actually levy property tax money. There was an agreement and a lot of conversations, including conversations with Chair Torkelson of the Transportation Committee, that for CTIB to dissolve and for Ramsey County and Hennepin County to raise that tax to a half cent to fund transit would help benefit and actually move forward the transportation bill that moved forward last year. So that was actually a part of the comprehensive funding for roads, bridges, and transit. But two counties raised the fund for the transit component, and everybody else got the benefit from the roads and bridge component from the state's action.
So, Mr. Chairman, and the testifier, if I hear this right, a tax increase that goes 100% to transit, and that's what happened in Hennepin and Ramsey County, that's not sowing division. That's part of the solution. But when we take an existing revenue source and we put it into roads and bridges, that's divisive and that divides the transportation community. That's what your testimony is today.
Right, because there was an agreement about how to move forward on that. We all worked together on that. There is not an agreement on this, and that sales tax can be used for roads and bridges also.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm fully informed and ready to vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner McDonough.
Thank you.
Okay, back to discussion to the bill. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I wasn't asking about the intricacies of this funding. and how it in the short term. I'm trying to figure out what kind of economy do you envision for Minnesota in 5 or 10 years? I mean, things are dramatically changing worldwide, and we've got to be able to adapt. And we're competing with other, just other big cities, other states. So we have to have a transportation system that supports a vision of our economy. And I need to understand what your, what the Republican vision for our economy is and how this fits in.
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Representative Yeganis. Mr. Chair, you know I'm a farmer by trade. You know that moving our goods and services around the state is what supports our economy. Mm-hmm. So investing in roads and bridges is what makes this state work, and it's what I intend to do. I've made an extensive effort to access more funds for transportation, not only in this effort but in other efforts here at the legislature, and I will continue to do that. Just one example of unintended consequences, you know, we've seen the very high popularity of Uber and Lyft services. They're actually, we thought, well, that's going to reduce the traffic in our cities. The truth is it's done the opposite because it's so convenient and so easy to use. We're seeing that the use of those services is actually increasing the amount of traffic on our roads. Roads and bridges are what make this state work.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll take your advice and rather than looking to the past, look to the future. And both you and I serve as observers to the Council of Economic Advisors. And a point that I want to make is that the projections, and I wish Dr. Koulikangas was here. We did have testimony from her earlier in the session, but it would have been particularly relevant today with the bill that's before us. And we were going to have a temporary bump in growth. We saw that. And then it begins to decline as we move into the future bienniums. So that's something to keep in mind. I'm talking about the general fund. There will still be growth, but it's not going to be as rapid as what was currently projected and when we move into the future. We also heard from the commissioner of MMB about the tax bill that was passed and what the negative impact of that bill that's currently in conference committee will be on future revenue. And so I think those are two issues that we have to keep in mind as we move forward when we start to constitutionally begin to dedicate funds. Now, one comment about the past, I had a chair similar to what you have now and the very one that you have, but I was there when we were dealing with huge deficits. And believe me, when you're dealing with multi-billion dollar deficits, it's no fun when you're trying to balance a budget with various competing demands and you have huge negative numbers. So what I'm saying, I think we have to exercise some caution as we move forward and keep in mind what the state economist, Dr. Koulikangas, has said. And by the way, that council is made up, for those of you that have never been there to observe, it's conservative economists, liberal economists, you hear all kinds of different points of view, and then the role of the state economist is to massage that advice, and that's the reports that we see before us. And it's also dealing with some national modeling as they put that together, just as a reminder. As applied to Minnesota law. So think a little bit about the future. I'm taking your advice. I could very easily, because I was in the eye of the storm when earlier comments were made from both sides of the aisle about what may or may not have happened in the past. But let's think about the future. And the problem is we're not growing the pie here, or it's not growing as rapidly as what's going to be needed when we get into future biennium. And there are going to be some very tough choices down the road, and this takes one part of it off the table. The other thing I want to point out is that there's a lot of discussion, and some of you on taxes heard me make these very points then.
a lot of the discussion has been what the percentage is relative to the entire state budget. What I think is that you realistically have to look at is what the percentage that would be set aside here is relative to your economic growth. That's a totally different percentage, and it drives then what I'm talking about in terms of other competing demands. So I think what I heard Commissioner McDonough saying is that we have to get together, those of us that are advocates for the infrastructure, and by the way, on the bonding bill, I was an advocate, and to this day I'm an advocate for a larger bonding bill than what is going through. We are having a greatly reduced bonding bill, although transportation funding was included, but it was not a new bill. That's now attached to the bonding bill. But there are other roads that we could take, and I think what Commissioner McDonough then was saying, going back to my reference to his testimony, is that we need to get together, get all of us on the same page, so we can move forward and resolve some of these issues in the future.
I'm going to recognize
the future is now, by the way, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to recognize Representative Hornstein and then go to the author of the bill. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, no, I've been around the transportation issue for a while, and while I oppose this legislation, I do believe that, you know, the proponents make a good point about our needs. And so I said in the Transportation Committee that, you know, we had 19 testifiers there, and I couldn't disagree with any of them. But I think at the end, Representative Carlson's point is a good one, because we can't predict the future. And this is a pretty good chunk of general fund money. And we have 70% of that goes to education and health care. Of course, we could use it for affordable housing and all kinds of other things. And so the trend around the country and red states and blue states, but in particularly red states, Mr. Chair, is that people have come to some consensus around increasing the user fee for motor fuels. And that's the responsible way long-term to address this, and I think our state is evolving on that question. And this is a relatively small amount of money compared to the need that's out there. So we're going to have to either do that increase that I've said, or a mileage-based user fee, if that's the trend of the future, if that's what's going to happen. But at some point, we're going to have other dedicated revenue besides this constitutional amendment. And so I think with the risk to the general fund, even as a advocate for roads and bridges, I'm still going to be voting no on this.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to keep this very brief, but I can't help but respond to the idea that somehow putting more debt on our credit card is a better solution than committing resources. The money to service those bonds comes from the general fund. I don't see the difference. In fact, I see a downside, because you're not only trying to, you're paying for past debt and you're paying interest. Dedicating these resources directly to transportation makes good sense. It's the thing we should do, and I strongly support this, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to go on, but the question is, will we ask the voters of Minnesota whether or not they think this is appropriate? In the end, it's up to the voters of Minnesota to decide whether or not to constitutionally dedicate these resources to our transportation system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson renews his motion that House File 4437 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. House File 4437 is referred to the General Register. Last bill on the agenda is House File 1440. Representative Baker moves that House File 1440 be referred to the General Register. Representative Baker moves the DE6-4 amendment, and there is a A10 amendment to the amendment that is being passed out. Representative Baker, could you briefly describe the A10 amendment to the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will. The A10 amendment that's being handed out right now basically just allows the couple of the components in here that will be ongoing money for treatment facilities for addiction. There's not a, it's not a one-time funding, so it goes on into the tails. And also, so I think it just notates the DEA agents that we've added on to provide law enforcement better return on what's happening with the drugs and, you know, fentanyl issues out there. We wanted to provide that more support with the DEA agents, and then also just residential treatment facility funding. So that's what that amendment does, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Discussion of the A-10 amendment to the amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the A-10 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-10 amendment to the amendment is adopted. Representative Baker, let's see. Why don't we adopt the DE-6 amendment, and then you can present the bill, if that's all right with members. Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, this is a huge amendment with a lot of language, and it did come in relatively late, and I know you've been flexible with the timing, although your preference is 24 hours in advance, but this is a huge amendment, and I think before we adopt it, I mean, this is now the bill.
Well, we can. It is now the bill. We can
and
discuss
before
it.
Before we
yeah,
adopt
we did.
It, we should have a walkthrough and maybe highlighting, if we could, Mr. Chairman, the changes in the amendment from the bill that originally came in. In other words, what's new here that because some of us did have a chance to go through the bill that was re-referred, but we haven't had a chance to go through the amendment.
Okay, well, we can do that, Representative Carlson. This amendment did meet the deadline that we had yesterday, however, so people should have had an opportunity to review it if they wish. But I'm fine doing that, Representative Carlson. So, Representative Baker, can you give us a walk through the DE-6-4 amendment?
I sure will, Mr. Chair, members. And I also want to point out the spreadsheet that's being handed out that looks like this is the current spreadsheet. Members, this is about $6.5 million of new spending in the opioid addiction battle that we're having. This would actually complement many of the items that was already brought forward to us through the HHS financing bill. That's part of the large supplemental bill. But I'll talk about the additional items here. And again, as Representative Carlson has pointed out, this bill has made a lot of stops and has had a lot of changes. And every time it's stopped, it's gotten better along the way. So I feel good, and I feel we should talk about these changes. I think they're all valid. We've got the agency here if they have any thoughts and questions on some of these things. So I'll kind of quickly walk through it. I know our time is limited, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Baker and members, let me just point out, too, that there is a spreadsheet in people's packets if they want to have a brief summary of the spending in the bill. That spreadsheet's now been amended, of course, with the A-10 amendment to the amendment to have ongoing funding for the special agent positions for the BCA and ongoing funding for the medical assistance rate. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I'm going to stand corrected. I said DEA earlier. I meant BCA. So my apologies for that mistake. So again, just quickly going through the bill, from day one, we've always started a new advisory council. I feel like we need a sort of a mother board to talk about where addiction processes and resources are going. This would help direct the commissioners of Department of Health, DHS, to kind of help us find the urgent matters of addiction in general, but also trying to get the opioid crisis into a better place. So I like the fact that we worked hard on this Opioid Addiction Treatment Advisory Council. As we move along here as well, we've got we have some education process in here. I'm on. I don't want to go too fast here. I'll just use my research here. There we go. In Section 2, we have the Opioid Addiction Prevention Treatment Account. Again, we started this bill out hoping to try to get a stewardship fee. That was not working out as well in committee, so we've just been focusing on general fund. But what I'm looking at is still creating a special account because, ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to see federal dollars coming someday to this, and I want to make sure that if there are pending lawsuits coming, federal dollars may be coming into Minnesota, I want to make sure the special account is also overseen by this advisory council as well. So that's why I want to have that special account set up in Section 2. Again, we've got in Section 3, comprehensive assessments. We made a lot of changes last year to reforming how we get folks to detox centers quicker and get their assessments done faster. Part of this was giving some wiggle room to counties and folks that do the Rule 25 assessments. So in Section 3, we've got a comprehensive assessment that allows residential and other substance abuse treatment programs to have a licensed staff person who is not a qualified alcohol and drug counselor, but it gives them some time to get up to speed, but they have to have at least 3 years of experience in their current role to make sure that these assessments are happening quickly so that nobody is missing out on getting into detox as fast as they can. I want to talk about limiting prescription opioids for a first prescription. We think that a 7-day prescription for an opioid on the first one is a good idea. We've got that mentioned in this bill. It was an informational hearing from earlier on, and it's gaining a lot of support. It is supported by the Minnesota Medical Association because it gives the doctors a lot of leeway. If they see that they need to make a professional judgment, they can continue to prescribe as they want to, but we want to put a message out there. We believe 7-day prescribing with lower morphine equivalents is the way to go as we move forward with this legislation. This is mostly policy things here. I'm going to get to the dollars in just a few seconds here. I think I'll switch over to the spreadsheet now. Again, this does a lot of duplications for what has happened in the HHS bill. Approximately $7 to $8 million is in HHS finance that's specific to opioid and addiction recovery. So total, we're looking at about $14 million this year to help towards addiction and getting our arms around this thing. I'm really proud of the work that's been happening at St. Gabriel's up in Little Falls in the Morrison County projects. They just recently announced 8 new locations around Minnesota. We are extending another opportunity for their grants and their work to expand even further. We have an education grant from Kunish Pudin brought this forward to me, grades 5 through 12 in education, systems in the schools that the Department of Education is going to work on a curriculum there. Project ECHO is a project in greater Minnesota that has got medical doctors, general practicing doctors, on the phone twice a week talking about how do we roll out a program in our small little communities, and they've got 70 to 80 to 90 people on the phone call. This thing has really taken off. And we are training doctors all around the state of Minnesota quickly about how we get more help to folks in local communities. One of Chair Dean's bills, which I'm really proud to have part of this as well, it provides 2 hours of continuing education for doctors. In the next 2 to 3 years, they have to go through this continuing education regarding opioid and addiction recovery. The prescription monitoring program is something that I've mentioned before. We need to give the doctors and providers a better tool so they can look up on the database much quicker, much faster, in their exam rooms, on their electronic health records computer, so they can find out very quickly if somebody is, in fact, either a high risk of substance abuse or perhaps might be getting drugs somewhere else. This appropriation to the Board of Pharmacy for the Prescription Monitoring Program enhancements will start that process and get that integrated here within a couple of years. Other dollars amount here, members, FQHCs, the Federal Qualified Health Centers in Minneapolis here has a fabulous opioid program that they started a couple years ago. They're kind of in the heart of Minneapolis about addiction is all around them. We have $1 million here for a grant program that they could actually quickly roll out to many other of the Fed FQHCs around Minnesota. They've got 17 around the state. They've got a program that they can roll that out. This is one-time money for this launch as well. We have money in here, again, part of the bill for bonding was $900,000 for the White Earth Opioid Treatment Facility to bring those up to speed, especially for residents and mothers expecting children. That is a another part that's part of the bonding bill. We have grants awarded to community paramedics. One of the most exciting things I've heard this session was North Memorial had a pilot project with community paramedics. If somebody comes into the ER room and they are brought back to life with Narcan, there right now is not a very good follow-up program. They literally kind of wake up from the dead, sit up, and they're out of the ER room literally within a couple of hours, and they're likely going to use again because they're going to get really sick. So what this community paramedic will do, will follow up with the person who went through that process. Within 24 hours, we're going to find this person, knock on their door, and just try to reach out for help. We want to let them know there's medically assisted treatment available. If you want to help, have help, we're ready for you. If we get 30% of those folks that are ready to go just after being on the ER room, that might be a wake-up call for some of those folks. So I'm really excited about that project as well. We have $4 million in this. And again, as we mentioned in the A-10 amendment, this is ongoing funding. We are losing residential treatment facilities around Minnesota. Last year alone, we lost 400 beds in Minnesota that are helping people get off of drugs. Many people, most people, cannot do this alone. And they need to be in a treatment facility that can talk to their addiction, the specific addiction to many of them have dual diagnosis with mental health issues. We need to make sure we give them the right tools. We can't let any more rooms and beds leave our state. So they did not get much of an increase at all last year. They got a 1% increase. Before that, it was a 2.5% increase back in 15. And before that, there was zero for the last 8 years. So I want to put some money there. And then, Mr. Chair, I think that runs most of it. I'm here to take questions. But this total new monies towards this is $6.4 million, about $6.5 million. And I'm happy to take questions, Mr. Chair. Proud of this bill.
I've got Representative Murphy. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say I appreciate that. This is the bill, and that's why before we adopted it, so I view it that the bill was presented.
Right,
I don't want to belabor the point, but it wasn't. The reason I wanted that walkthrough was it wasn't posted until after 9 o'clock last night, even though it was 338. You probably had it in your possession in a timely manner, but I was talking about when it was posted. But I didn't want to belabor that point, but that's why I requested a walkthrough now. But thank you, Representative Baker.
Okay, with that, let's go ahead and take up the DE6 amendment, and then we'll have discussion to the bill. All in favor of the DE6-4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The DE6-4 amendment is adopted. And members, there is one technical amendment to the DE6-4 language that is on page 19, line 26. If you note there is a blank. And I'll have Mr. Sullivan read the technical amendment. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, the technical amendment, as the chair indicated, is on page 19, line 26 of the DE amendment. Delete the ellipses and insert and strike percent and insert a percentage established by the commissioner, comma, based on the available appropriation, comma.
All right. And members, what this basically is, you can see there's a blank there, and we haven't gotten back from the department the exact percentage that should be based on the appropriation that we are talking about in the bill, the $4 million. And so we're basically saying when we get back that percentage from the department, that will be the percentage that would be in that blank. And so, members, I'd move that oral amendment that was spoken by Mr. Sullivan. See no discussion. All in favor of that oral technical amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The oral technical amendment is adopted. Discussion to the bill, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Baker. And this is a compilation of work that's been going on now for a couple of years, and so I want to thank you. I know how important this is to you personally, and it is important to the state of Minnesota. I do want to talk just briefly, if you can talk about how this fits with the current budget resolution. It looks like most of the spending happens in 2019 or 2019 and beyond. So I'm wondering if you can just talk about it in the context of the resolution.
You know, I think what I'll just do is jump in, Representative Murphy. There is $6,435,000 of new money in this bill as amended that comes from the other bills category that's in the budget resolution. The other $5,250,000 that's in the bill, and I'm talking about just FY19, that is money that was already spent in the HHS target, because as you may recall, we had some opioid money in the HHS bill.
All right, thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was glad that Representative Murphy asked that, but I wanted to ask, though, too, I noticed in the amendment that we adopted to the DE, the H-10, as we were, Representative Baker was discussing the amendment, I had a chance to go through and see exactly what that does. And what it does is it eliminates language in some places that makes some appropriations ongoing. So how does that, so I have a couple questions. I mean, first of all, I want to understand what that does in terms of, I think we do have some kind of a tails target, do we not? And I just want to see if that, how that works out going forward.
Yeah, Representative Liebling, we, what it would do on here is, I think I've mentioned this before, but underneath the spreadsheet, if you look at the spreadsheet, the special agent positions, at the top for the BCA would be extended, so you'd have $420,000 a year in 20 and 21 for a total of $840,000. The medical assistance rate under human services, the next category, would be extended at $4 million a year, so you'd have a total of $8 million a year. And this is, of course, not the health and human services bill, so these tails targets would be again, or these tails would be part of the other bills category.
Okay, and then
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the other thing I just wanted to, as Representative Murphy alluded to, a lot of what's in here in this very big amendment is, in fact, our bills that we've heard in Health and Human Services. And I just wanted to kind of confirm with Representative Baker, since we are moving through this so quickly and haven't had a real time to look at it closely, whether that is, in fact, the case. I mean, is there anything here that hasn't been really already vetted? I mean, a lot of this is, of course, very familiar, but, just to be sure that there aren't any changes here that we didn't already hear in committee and that kind of thing. I think I understand what you're doing here, pulling these things out, sending them separately, maybe to avoid getting hung up at the end. But I just wanted to get that confirmed.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, this is the bill. So you're looking at pretty much the final version of what we have right now going to the floor, hopefully after today's vote, with the slight adjustment with the A-10 and the ongoing money. But, again, it kind of clarifies, again, I remember Representative Considine brought up a good point with some of the rule assessment issues that we have. We fixed that in here with the department and the agency to make sure that there was some good language in there. So this is really encompasses what I think is a combination of the work that Chair Dean did in HHS and yourself, and the work that our committee has done for building a really comprehensive opioid bill that we think is going to save a lot of lives. But this is a really, the whole bill is part of the D6-4 amendment.
Thank
yes.
You.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, very quickly, kind of following up what Representative Murphy, the other day I asked about the other bills was $50 million. We've got in the pipeline the pension bill at 27. I think you said this one is 6.
That's correct.
So am I correct then in saying we've got $17 million roughly available for other bills yet?
Representative Carlson, I would say that's a good rough estimate, yes.
Yeah, and that's what I was meaning, rough estimate. So the other quick question then being that maybe I should wait until you vote this out, and then I'll have another follow-up on this question.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Baker, closing comments.
I just can't thank the Ways and Means leadership and the team here enough to allow me to get to this point. I'm excited to get this to the House floor, and this has been a work in progress and a lot of good changes. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, Representative Baker renews his motion that House File 1440, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 1440, as amended, is referred to the General Register.
And Mr. Chairman, I know we have to adjourn, but are there any other bills, then, with costs that you plan on bringing before the committee other than what I've just mentioned here.
Well, we have the pension bill, of course.
That's the one I mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we still have some discussion about a bill Representative Nash has with some additional funding for deputy registrars that would be FY19 funding. And that the amount of that funding is still under discussion. I'm anticipating that we'll have a meeting probably Monday sometime after session to at least take up the pension bill pending referral to us and perhaps that other bill. I don't think I know of any other bills that are here right now.
And another question, have you signed all the committee reports?
I've signed all the ones I've got. Yes.
Okay.
All the ones I know of, Representative Carlson, I believe I have.
Yeah, I was hopeful that there would be an opportunity to amend the budget resolution or change the target on one particular bill. If it was still in possession of the, if it was still in possession of the committee, and a lot of members may not realize that, but one of the things that you and I have had is that how quickly we sign the committee report and how many adjustments you can make if you recall a bill. Okay, thank you.
All right, members,
I was talking about.
With that, stay tuned for an update on our next meeting and sessions at 10. We are adjourned.